there were enough gaps in the no-ship's defenses to gratify him. In his serial lifetimes, he had collected skills the way his fellow masters collected pleasing baubles. They had always considered him too serious, but now he had found the place and time for vindication. Study of the Bene Gesserit had always attracted him. Over the eons, he had acquired a body of knowledge about them. He knew it held myths and misinformation, but faith in the purposes of God assured him the view he held would serve the great belief, no matter the rigors of holy testing. Part of his Bene Gesserit catalog he called typicals, from the frequent remark, "That's typical of them." The typicals fascinated him. It was typical for them to tolerate gross but non-threatening behavior in others they would not accept in themselves. Bene Gesserit standards are higher. Saitali had heard that even from some of his late companions. "We have the gift of seeing ourselves as others see us," Odrade had once said. Saitali included this among typicals. But her words did not accord with the great belief. "Only God saw your ultimate self." Odrade's boast had the sound of hubris. "They tell no casual lies. Truth serves them better." He often wondered about that. Mother Superior herself quoted it as a rule of the Bene Gesserit. There remained the fact that witches appeared to hold a cynical view of truth. She dared claim it was Zensuni. Whose truth? Modified in what way? In what context? They had been seated the previous afternoon in his no-ship quarters. He had asked for a consultation on mutual problems, his euphemism for bargaining. They were alone except for Komais and the comings and goings of watchful sisters. His quarters were comfortable enough. Three plaz-walled rooms in restful green, a soft bed, chairs reduced to fit his diminutive body. This was an Ixion no-ship, and he felt certain his warders did not suspect how much he knew of it. As much as the Ixions. Ixion machines all around, but never an Ixion to be seen. He doubted there was a single Ixion on Chapter House. The witches were notorious for doing their own maintenance. Odrade moved and spoke slowly, watching him with care. "They are not impulsive. You heard that often." She asked after his comfort and appeared concerned for him. He glanced around his sitting room. "I see no Ixions." She pursed her lips with displeasure. "Is this why you asked for consultation?"
"Of course not, witch. I merely practice my arts of distraction."
"You would not expect me to mention things I wish to conceal? Then why would I call your attention to Ixions when I know it is unlikely there are any dangerous intruders walking freely on your accursed planet?"
"The much-vaunted Ixion connection Wheatley Lazu maintained so long. You know of that. You punished Ix memorably more than once."
The technocrats of Ix might hesitate to irritate the Bene Gesserit, he thought. But they would be extremely careful not to arouse the ire of honored maters. Secret trading was indicated by the presence of this no-ship, but the price must have been ruinous, and the circumlocutions exceptional. Very nasty, those whores from the scattering. They might need Ix themselves, he guessed, and Ix might secretly defy the whores to make an arrangement with the Bene Gesserit. But the limits were tight, and chances of betrayal many. These thoughts comforted him as he bargained. Odrade, in a brittle mood, unsettled him several times with silences during which she stared at him in that disturbing Bene Gesserit way. The bargaining chips were large. no less than survival for each of them, and always in the pot that tenuous thing, ascendancy, control of the human universe, perpetuation of your own ways as the dominant pattern. Give me a small opening that I may expand, Saitali thought. Give me my own face dancers. Give me servants who will do only my bidding. It is a small thing to ask, he said. I seek personal comfort, my own servants. Odraid continued to stare at him in that weighted way of the Bene Gesserit, that always seemed to peel away the masks and see deep into you. But I have masks you have not penetrated. He could see that she found him repulsive, the way her gaze fixed sequentially on each of his features. He knew what she was thinking. An elfin figure with narrow face and puckish eyes. Widow's peak. Her gaze moved down. Tiny mouth with sharp teeth and pointed canines. Saitali knew himself to be a figure out of humankind's most dangerously disturbing mythologies. Odraid would ask herself, why did the Bene Tlilax choose this particular physical appearance, when their control of genetics could have given them something more impressive? For the very reason that it disturbs you, Pawinda Dirt. He thought immediately of another typical. The Bene Gesserit seldom scatter dirt. Saitali had seen the dirty aftermath of many Bene Gesserit actions. Look at what happened to Dune, burnt to cinders because you women of Shaitan chose that holy ground to challenge the whores. Even the revenants of our prophet gone to their reward. Everyone dead. And he hardly dared contemplate his own losses. No Tlilazu planet had escaped the fate of Dune. The Bene Gesserit caused that, and he must suffer their tolerance. A refugee with only God to support him. He asked Odraid about scattered dirt on Dune. You find that only when we are in extremis. Is that why you attracted the violence of those whores? She refused to discuss it. One of Saitali's late companions had said, the Bene Gesserit leave straight tracks. You might think them complex, but when you look closely, their way smooths. That companion and all the others have been butchered by the whores. His only survival lay in cells of an allentropy capsule. So much for a dead master's wisdom. Odraid wanted more technical information about axolotl tanks. Oh, how cleverly she worded her questions. Bargaining for survival, and each little bit carried a heavy weight. What had he received for his tiny measured pieces of data about the axolotl tanks? Odraid took him out of the ship occasionally now. But the whole planet was as much a prison to him as this ship. Where could he go that the witches would not find him? What were they doing with their own axolotl tanks? He was not even sure about this. The witches lied with such facility. Was it wrong to supply them even with limited knowledge? He realized now he had told them far more than the bare biotechnical details to which he had confined himself. They definitely deduced how Masters had created a limited immortality, always a Gola replacement growing in the tanks. That, too, was lost. He wanted to scream this at her in his frustrated rage. Questions. Obvious questions. He parried her questions with wordy arguments about my need for face dancer servants and my own ship system console. She was slyly adamant, probing for more knowledge of the tanks. The information to produce melange from our tanks might induce us to be more liberal with our guest. Our tanks. Our guest. These women were like a plasteel wall. no tanks for his personal use. All of that Flelazu power gone. It was a thought full of mournful self-pity. He restored himself with a reminder. God obviously tested his resourcefulness. They think they hold me in a trap, but their restrictions hurt. No face dancer servants? Very well. He would seek other servants, not face dancers. Saitali felt the deepest anguish of his many lives when he thought of his lost face dancers, his mutable slaves. Damn these women and their pretense that they shared the great belief. Omnipresent acolytes and reverend mothers always snooping around. Spies and comies everywhere. Oppressive. On first coming to Chapter House, he had sensed a shyness about his jailers, a privacy that became intense when he probed into the workings of their order. Later he came to see this as a circling up, all facing outward at any threat. What is ours. You may not enter. Saitali recognized a parental posturing in this, a maternal view of humankind. Behave, or we will punish you. And Bene Gesserit punishments certainly were to be avoided. As Odrade continued to demand more than he would give, Saitali fastened his attention on a typical he felt sure was true. They cannot love. But he was forced to agree. Neither love nor hate were purely rational. He thought of such emotions as a dark fountain shadowing the air all around, a primitive gusher that sprayed unsuspecting humans. How this woman does chatter! He watched her, not really listening. What were their flaws? Was it a weakness that they avoided music? Did they fear the secret play on emotions? The aversion appeared to be heavily conditioned, but the conditioning did not always succeed. In his many lives, he had seen witches appear to enjoy music. When he questioned Odrade, she became quite heated, and he suspected a deliberate display to mislead him. We cannot let ourselves be distracted. Don't you ever replay great musical performances in memory? I'm told that in ancient times... Of what use is music played on instruments no longer known to most people? Oh? What instruments are those? Where would you find a piano? Still in that false anger. Terrible instruments to tune, and even more difficult to play. How prettily she protests. I've never heard of this... This piano, did you say? Is it like the Balisset? Distant cousins. But it could only be tuned to an approximate key, an idiosyncrasy of the instrument. Why do you single out this piano? Because I sometimes think it too bad we no longer have it. Producing perfection from imperfection is, after all, the highest of art forms. Perfection from imperfections. She was trying to distract him with Zensuni words, feeding the illusion that these witches shared his great belief. He had been warned many times about this peculiarity of Bene Gesserit bargaining. They approached everything from an oblique angle, revealing only at the last instant what they really sought. But he knew what they bargained for here. She wanted all of his knowledge, and sought to pay nothing. Still, how tempting her words were. Saitali felt a deep wariness. Her words fitted themselves so neatly into her claim that the Bene Gesserit sought only to perfect human society. So she thought she could teach him. Another typical. They see themselves as teachers. When he expressed doubt of his claim, she said, Naturally, we build up pressures in societies we influence. We do it that we may direct those pressures. I find this discordant, he complained. Why, Master Saitali, it's a very common pattern. Governments often do this to produce violence against chosen targets.
You did it yourselves, and see where it got you. So she dares claim that Tlilazu brought this calamity on themselves. We follow the lesson of the great messenger, she said, using the Islamiyat for the prophet Leto II. The word sounded alien on her lips, but he was taken aback. She knew how all Tlilazu revered the prophet. But I have heard these women call him tyrant. Still speaking Islamiyat, she demanded, Was it not his goal to divert violence, producing a lesson of value to all? Does she joke about the great belief? That is why we accepted him, she said. He did not play by our rules, but he played for our goal. She dared say she accepted the prophet. He did not challenge her, although the provocation was great. A delicate thing, a reverend mother's view of herself and her behavior. He suspected they constantly readjusted this view, never bouncing far in any direction. No self-hate, no self-love. Confidence, yes, maddening self-confidence. But that did not require hate or love. Only a cool head, every judgment ready for correction, just as she claimed. It would seldom require praise. A job well done? Well, what else did you expect? Bene Gesserit training strengthens the character. That was folk wisdom's most popular typical. He tried to start an argument with her on this. Isn't honored mater's conditioning the same as yours? Look at Mirbella. Is it generalities you want, Saitali? Was that amusement in her tone? A collision between two conditioning systems? Isn't that a good way to view this confrontation? He ventured. And the more powerful will emerge victorious, of course. Definitely sneering. Isn't that how it always works? His anger not well bridled. Must a Bene Gesserit remind a Tlilazu that subtleties are another kind of weapon? Have you not practiced deception? A feigned weakness to deflect your enemies and lead them into traps. Vulnerabilities can be created. Of course. She knows about the eons of Tlilazu deception, creating an image of inept stupidities. So that's how you expect to deal with our foes? We intend to punish them, Saitali. Such implacable determination. New things he learned about the Bene Gesserit filled him with misgivings. Odraid, taking him for a well-guarded afternoon stroll in the cold winter outside the ship, burly proctors just a pace behind, stopped to watch a small procession coming from Central. 5 Bene Gesserit women, 2 of them acolytes by their white-trimmed robes, but the other 3 in an unrelieved gray, not known to him. They wheeled a cart into one of the orchards. A frigid wind blew across them. A few old leaves whipped from the dark branches. The cart bore a long bundle shrouded in white. A body? It was the right shape. When he asked, Odraid regaled him with an account of Bene Gesserit burial practices. If there was a body to bury, it was done with the casual dispatch he now witnessed. No reverend mother ever had an obituary or wanted time-wasting rituals. Did her memory not live on in her sister's? He started to argue that this was irreverent, but she cut him off. Given the phenomenon of death, all attachments in life are temporary. We modify that somewhat in other memory. You did a similar thing, Saitali. And now we incorporate some of your abilities in our bag of tricks. Oh, yes. That's the way we think of such knowledge. It merely modifies the pattern. An irreverent practice. Nothing irreverent about it. Into the dirt they go, where at least they can become fertilizer. And she continued to describe the scene without giving him a chance for further protests. They had this regular routine he now observed, she said.
A large mechanical auger was wheeled into the orchard, where it drilled a suitable hole in the earth. The corpse, bound in that cheap cloth, was buried vertically, and an orchard tree planted over it. Orchards were laid out in grid patterns, a cenotaph at one corner where the locations of burials were recorded. He saw the cenotaph when she pointed it out, a square green thing about 3 meters high. "I think that body's being buried at about C-21, she said, watching the auger at work while the burial team waited, leaning against the cart. "That one will fertilize an apple tree." She sounded ungodly happy about it. As they watched the auger withdraw and the cart being tipped, the body sliding into the hole, Odrade began to hum. Saitali was surprised. "You said the Bene Gesserit avoided music." "Just an old ditty." The Bene Gesserit remained a puzzle, and more than ever he saw the weakness of typicals. How could you bargain with people whose patterns did not follow an acceptable path? You might think you understood them, and then they shot off in a new direction. They were untypical. Trying to understand them disrupted his sense of order. He was certain he had not received anything real in all of this bargaining. A bit more freedom that was actually the illusion of freedom. Nothing he really wanted came from this cold-faced witch. It was tantalizing to try piecing together any substance from what he knew about the Bene Gesserit. There was, for instance, the claim they did without most bureaucratic systems and record-keeping. Except for Balanda's archives, of course. And every time he mentioned those, Odrade said, "Heaven guard us," or something equivalent. Now he asked, "How do you maintain yourselves without officials and records?" He was deeply puzzled. "A thing needs doing, we do it. Bury a sister?" She pointed to the scene in the orchard where shovels had been brought into play and dirt was being tamped on the grave. "That's how it's done. And there's always someone around who's responsible. They know who they are." Who takes care of this unwholesome?" "It's not unwholesome. It's part of our education. Failed sisters usually supervise. Acolytes do the work." Isn't this distasteful to them? Failed sisters, you say? And acolytes? It would seem to be more of a punishment than..." "Punishment? Come, Saitali. Have you only one song to sing?" She pointed at the burial party. "After their apprenticeship, all of our people willingly accept their jobs."
"But no..."
"Bureaucratic..." "We're not stupid." Again, he did not understand, but she responded to his silent puzzlement. "Surely you know bureaucracies always become voracious aristocracies after they attain commanding power." He had difficulty seeing the relevance. Where was she leading him? When he remained silent, she said, "Honored maitres have all the marks of bureaucracy. Ministers of this, great honored maitres of that. A powerful few at the top and many functionaries below. They already are full of adolescent hungers. Like voracious predators, they never consider how they exterminate their prey. A tight relationship. Reduce the numbers of those upon whom you feed, and you bring your own structure crashing down." He found it difficult to believe the witches really saw honored maitres this way, and said so. "If you survive, Saitali, you will see my words made real. Great cries of rage by those unthinking women at the necessity to retrench. Much new effort to wring the most out of their prey. Capture most of them. Squeeze them harder. It will just mean quicker extermination. Idaho says they're already in the dieback stage." "The Gola says this?" So she was using him as a mentat. "Where do you get such ideas? Surely this does not originate with your Gola." "Continue to believe he's yours." He merely confirmed our assessment.
an example in other memory alerted us.
Oh!
This thing of other memory bothered him. Could their claim be true? Memories from his own multiple lives were of enormous value. He asked for confirmation. We remembered the relationship between a food animal called a snowshoe rabbit and a predatory cat called the lynx. The cat population always grew to follow the population of the rabbits, and then overfeeding dumped the predators into famine times and severe dieback. An interesting term, dieback, descriptive of what we intend for the honored maters. When their meeting ended, without anything gained for him, Saitali found himself more confused than ever. Was that truly their intent? The damnable woman. He could not be sure of anything she said. When she returned him to his quarters in the ship, Saitali stood for a long time looking through the barrier field at the long corridor where Idaho and Mirbella sometimes came on their way to their practice floor. He knew that must be where they went through a wide doorway down there. They always emerged sweating and breathing deeply. Neither of his fellow prisoners appeared, although he loitered there for more than an hour. She uses the Gola as a mentat. That must mean he has access to a ship systems console. Surely she would not deprive her mentat of his data. Somehow I must contrive it that Idaho and I meet intimately. There's always the whistling language we impress on every Gola. I must not appear too anxious. A small concession in the bargaining, perhaps. A complaint that my quarters are confining. See how I chafe at imprisonment. Education is no substitute for intelligence. That elusive quality is defined only in part by puzzle-solving ability. It is in the creation of new puzzles reflecting what your senses report that you round out the definition. Mentat Text 1, Decto. They wheeled Lucilla into great honored Mater's presence in a tubular cage. A cage within a cage. Shiga wire netting confined her to the center of the thing. "I am great honored Mater," the woman in the heavy black chair greeted her. Small woman, red gold leotards. "The cage is for your protection, should you try to use voice. We are immune. Our immunity takes the form of a reflex. We kill. A number of you have died that way. We know voice and use it. Remember it when I release you from your cage." She waved away the servants who had brought the cage. "Go, go!" Lucilla looked around at the room. Windowless, almost square. Lighted by a few silvery glow globes. Acid green walls. Typical interrogation setting. It was somewhere high. They had brought her cage in a null tube shortly after dawn. A panel behind Great Honored Mater snapped aside, and a smaller cage came sliding into the room on a hidden mechanism. This cage was square, and in it stood what she thought at first was a naked man, until he turned and looked at her. Futar. It had a wide face, and she saw the canines.
"Want back rub," the Futar said. "Yes, darling. I'll rub your back later." "Want eat," the Futar said. It glared at Lucilla. "Later, darling." The Futar continued to study Lucilla. "You handler?" it asked. "Of course she's not a handler." "Want eat," the Futar insisted. "Later," I said. "For now, you just sit there and purr for me." The Futar squatted in its cage, and a rumbling sound issued from its throat. "Aren't they sweet when they purr?" Great Honored Mater obviously did not expect an answer. The presence of the Futar puzzled Lucilla. Those things were supposed to hunt and kill honored maters. It was caged, though. "Where did you capture it?" Lucilla asked. "On Gamu." She did not see what she had revealed. "And this is Junction," Lucilla thought. She had recognized it from the lighter the evening before. The Futar stopped purring. "Eat," it grumbled. Lucilla would have liked something to eat. They had not fed her in 3 days, and she was forced to suppress hunger pangs. Small sips of water from a liter jar left in the cage helped, but that was almost empty. The servants who had brought her had laughed at her request for food. "Futars like lean meat." It was the absence of melange that plagued her most. She had begun to feel the first withdrawal pains that morning. "I shall have to kill myself soon." The Lampada's horde pleaded for her to endure. "Be brave. What if that wild Reverend Mother fails us?" "Spider Queen. That is what Odraid calls this woman." Great Honored Mater continued to study her, hand to chin. It was a weak chin. In a face without positive features, the negative attracted the gaze. "You will lose in the end, you know," Great Honored Mater said. "Whistling past the graveyard," Lucilla said, and then had to explain the expression. There was a polite show of interest on Great Honored Mater's face. "How interesting." "Any of my aides would have killed you immediately for saying that. This is one of the reasons we are alone." "I am curious why you would say such a thing." Lucilla glanced at the squatting Futar. Futars did not occur overnight. They were genetically created from wild animal stock for one purpose. "Careful!" Orange flamed in Great Honored Mater's eyes. "Generations of development went into the creation of the Futars," Lucilla said. "We hunt them for our pleasure." "And the hunter becomes the hunted." Great Honored Mater leaped to her feet, eyes completely orange. The Futar became agitated and began whining. This calmed the woman. Slowly she sank back into her chair. One hand gestured at the caged Futar. "It's all right, darling. You'll eat soon, and then I'll rub your back." The Futar resumed its purring. "So you think we came back here as refugees?" Great Honored Mater said. "Yes. Don't try to deny it." "Worms often turn," Lucilla said. "Worms? You mean like those monstrosities we destroyed on Rakkas?" It was tempting to prod this honored mater and evoke the dramatic response. Alarm her enough, and she would certainly kill. "Please, sister," the Lampadas horde begged. "Endure." "You think I can escape from this place?" That silenced them, except for one faint protest. "Remember, we are the ancient doll. 7 times down, 8 times up. It came with a rocking image of a small red doll, grinning Buddha face and hands clasped over its fat belly. "You're obviously referring to the revenants of the God Emperor," Lucilla said. "I had something else in mind." Great Honored Mater took her time considering this. The orange faded from her eyes. "She's playing with me," Lucilla thought. "She intends to kill me and feed me to her pet. But think of the tactical information you could provide if we did escape." "We." But there was no avoiding the accuracy of that protest. They had brought her cage from the lighter while it was still daylight. Approaches to the Spider Queen's lair were well planned for difficult access, but the planning amused Lucilla. Very ancient, out-of-date planning.
narrow places in the approach lanes with observation turrets projecting from the ground like dull gray mushrooms appearing at the proper places on their mycelium. Sharp turns at critical points. No ordinary ground vehicle could negotiate such turns at speed. There was mention of this in Teg's critique of Junction, she recalled. Nonsense defenses. One had only to bring in heavy equipment, or go over such crude installations another way, and the things were isolated. Linked underground, naturally, but that could be disrupted by explosives. Ligate them, cut them off from their source, and they would fall piecemeal. No more precious energy coming down your tube, idiots. Visible sense of security, and honored maters kept it, for reassurance. Their defenders must spend a great deal of energy on useless displays to give these women a false sense of security. The hallways. Remember the hallways. Yes, the hallways in this gigantic building were enormous, the better to accommodate giant tanks in which guild navigators were forced to live groundside. Ventilation systems low along the halls to take out and reclaim spilled melange gas. She could imagine hatches thumping open and closed with disturbing reverberations. Guildsmen never seemed to mind loud noises. Energy transmission lines for mobile suspensors were thick black snakes winding across passages and into every room she had glimpsed. Wouldn't do to keep a navigator from snooping any place he desired. Many of the people she had seen wore guide pulsers, even honored maters. So they got lost here. Everything under the one giant mound of a roof with its phallic towers. The new residents found this attractive. Heavily insulated from the crude outdoors, where none of the important people go anyway, except to kill things, or watch the slaves at their amusing work and play. Through much of it, she had seen a shabbiness that said minimal expenditure on maintenance. They are not changing much. Teg's ground plan is still accurate. See how valuable your observations could be? Great honored mater stirred from her reverie. It is just possible that I could permit you to live, provided you satisfy some of my curiosity. How do you know I won't respond to your curiosity with a flow of pure shit? Vulgarity amused great honored mater. She almost laughed. Apparently, no one had ever warned her to beware of the Bene Gesserit when they resorted to vulgarity. The motivation for it was sure to be something distressing. No voice, eh? She thinks that's my only resource? Great honored mater had said enough, and reacted enough to give any reverend mother a sure handle on her. Body and speech signals always carried more information than was necessary for comprehension. There was inevitable extra information to be sampled. Do you find us attractive? Great honored mater asked. Odd question. People from the scattering all possess a certain attraction. Let her think I've seen many of them, including her enemies. You're exotic, meaning strange and new. And our sexual prowess? There's an aura to that, naturally. Exciting and magnetic to some. But not to you. Go for the chin. It was a suggestion from the Horde. Why not? I've been studying your chin, great honored mater. You have? Surprised. It's obviously your childhood chin, and you should be proud of that youthful remembrance. Not pleased at all, but unable to show it, hit the chin again. I'll bet your lovers often kiss your chin, Lucilla said. Angry now and still unable to vent it. Threaten me, will you? Warn me not to use voice. Kiss chin, the Futar said. I said later, darling. Now will you shut up? Taking it out on her poor pet. But you have questions you want to ask me, Lucilla said. sweetness itself. Another warning signal to the knowledgeable. I'm one of those who pours sugar syrup over everything. How nice! Such a pleasant time when we're with you. Isn't that beautiful? Weren't you clever to get it so cheaply, easily, quickly? Supply your own adverb. Great honored Mater was a moment composing herself. She sensed that she had been placed at a disadvantage, but could not say how. She covered the moment with an enigmatic smile, then... But I said I would release you. She pressed something on the side of her chair, and a section of the tubular cage swung aside, taking the shigawire netting with it. In the same instant, a low chair lifted from a panel in the floor, directly in front of her, and not a pace away. Lucilla seated herself in the chair, knees almost touching her inquisitor. Feet. Remember, they kill with their feet. She flexed her fingers, realizing then that she had been gripping her hands into fists. Damn the tensions. You should have some food and drink, Great Honored Mater said. She pushed something else on the side of her chair. A tray came up beside Lucilla. Plate, spoon, a glass brimming with red liquid. Showing off her toys. Lucilla picked up the glass. Poison? Smell it first. She sampled the drink. Stim tea and melange. I'm hungry. Lucilla returned an empty glass to the tray. The stim on her tongue smelled sharply of melange. What is she doing? Wooing me? Lucilla felt a flow of relief at the spice. The plate proved to hold beans in a piquant sauce. She ate it all after sampling the first bite for unwanted additives. Garlic in the sauce. She was hung up for the barest fraction of a second on memory of this ingredient. Adjunct to fine cooking. Specific against werewolves. Potent treatment for flatulence. You find our food pleasant? Lucilla wiped her chin. Very good. You are to be complimented on your chef. Never compliment the chef in a private establishment. Chefs can be replaced. Hostess is irreplaceable. A nice touch with garlic. We've been studying some of the library salvage from Lampadas. Gloating. See what you lost? So little of interest buried in all of that prattle. Does she want you to be her librarian? Lucilla waited silently. Some of my aides think there may be clues to your witch's nest there, or at least a way to eliminate you quickly. So many languages. Does she need a translator? Be blunt. What interests you? Very little. Who could possibly need accounts of the Butlerian Jihad? They destroyed libraries, too. Don't patronize me! She's sharper than we thought. Keep it blunt. I thought I was the object of patronage. Listen to me, witch. You think you can be ruthless in defense of your nest, but you do not understand what it is to be ruthless. I don't think you have yet told me how I can satisfy your curiosity. It's your science we want, witch. She pitched her voice lower. Let us be reasonable. With your help, we could achieve utopia. And conquer all of your enemies and achieve orgasm every time. You think science holds the keys to utopia? And better organization for our affairs? Remember, bureaucracy elevates conformity. Make that elevates fatal stupidity to the status of religion. Paradox, Great Honored Mater. Science must be innovative. It brings change. That's why science and bureaucracy fight a constant war. Does she know her roots? But think of the power. Think of what you could control. She doesn't know.
honored Mater assumptions about control fascinated Lucilla. You controlled your universe. You did not balance with it. You looked outward, never inward. You did not train yourself to sense your own subtle responses. You produced muscles, forces, powers, to overcome everything you defined as an obstacle. Were these women blind? When Lucilla did not speak, Honored Mater said, "We found much in the library about the Bene Tlilax. You joined them for many projects, which? Multiple projects. How to nullify a no-ship's invisibility. How to penetrate the secrets of the living cell, your Missionaria Protectiva, and something called the Language of God." Lucilla produced a tight smile. Did they fear there might be a real God out there somewhere? Give her a little taste. Be candid. "We joined the Tlilazu in nothing. Your people misinterpret what they found. You worry about being patronized? How do you think God would feel about it? We plant protective religions to help us. That is the Missionaria's function. The Tlilazu have only one religion. You organize religions? Not quite. The organizational approach to religion is always apologetic. We do not apologize. You are beginning to bore me. Why did we find so little about the God Emperor?" Pouncing. "Perhaps your people destroyed it." "Ah, then you do have an interest in him." "And so do you, Madam Spider." "I would have presumed, Great Honored Mater, that Leto II and his golden path were subjects of study at many of your academic centers." "That was cruel."
"We have no academic centers."
"I find your interest in him surprising."
"Casual interest, no more."
"And that Futar sprang from an oak tree struck by lightning." "We call his golden path the paper chase. He blew it into the infinite winds and said, 'See? There is where it goes. That's the scattering.'"
"Some prefer to call it the seeking."
"Could he really predict our future? Is that what interests you?" Bullseye. Great Honored Mater coughed into her hand. "We say Moabdeeb created a future. Leto II uncreated it."
"But if I could know..."
"Please, Great Honored Mater. People who demand that the Oracle predict their lives really want to know where the treasure is hidden."
"But of course..."
"Know your entire future, and nothing will ever surprise you. Is that it?
In so many words..."
"You don't want the future. You want now extended forever."
"I could not have said it better."
"And you said I bored you."
"What?"
Orange in her eyes. "Careful." "Never another surprise? What could be more boring?"
"Ah!
Oh, but that's not what I mean." "Then I'm afraid I do not understand what you want, Great Honored Mater."
"No matter. We'll return to it tomorrow."
Reprieve. Great Honored Mater stood.
"Back into your cage."
"Eat." The futar sounded plaintive. "I have some wonderful food for you downstairs, darling. Then I'll rub your back." Lucilla entered her cage. Great Honored Mater threw a chair cushion in after her.
"Use that against the Shigawire.
See how kind I can be?" The cage door sealed with a click. The futar in its cage slid back into the wall. The panel snapped closed over it.
"They get so restless when they're hungry," Great Honored Mater said.
She opened the door to the room and turned to contemplate Lucilla for a moment.
"You will not be disturbed here. I am refusing permission for anyone else to enter this room."
Many things we do naturally become difficult only when we try to make them intellectual subjects. It is possible to know so much about a subject that you become totally ignorant. Mentat text 2, dicto.
Periodically, Odraid went for dinner with acolytes and their proctor watchers, the most immediate warders in this mind prison from which many would never be released. What the acolytes thought and did really informed the depths of Mother Superior's consciousness on how well Chapter House functioned. Acolytes responded from their moods and forebodings more directly than Reverend Mothers. Full sisters got very good at not being seen at their worst. They did not try to conceal essentials, but anyone could walk in an orchard or close a door and be out of the view of watchdogs. Not so the acolytes. There was little slack time in Central these days. Even the dining halls had their constant streams of occupants, no matter the hour. Work shifts were staggered, and it was easy for a Reverend Mother to adjust her circadian rhythms to offbeat time. Odraid could not waste energy on such adjustments. At the evening meal, she paused at the door to the acolyte hall and heard the sudden hush. Even the way they conveyed food to their mouths said something. Where did the eyes go as the chopsticks progressed mouthward? Was it a quick stab and a rapid chew before a convulsive swallow? That was the one to watch. She was brewing upsets. And that thoughtful one over there who looked at each mouthful as though wondering how they hid the poison in such slop. A creative mind behind those eyes. Test her for a more sensitive position. Odraid entered the hall. The floor had a large checkerboard pattern, black and white plaids, virtually unscratchable. Acolyte said the pattern was for Reverend Mothers to use as a game board. Place one of us here, and another over there, and some along that central line. Move them thus, winner take all. Odraid took a seat near the corner of a table beside the western windows. The acolytes made room for her, their movements quietly unobtrusive. This hall was part of the oldest construction on Chapter House. Built of wood with clear-span beams overhead, enormously thick and heavy things finished in dull black. They were some 25 meters long without a joint. Somewhere on Chapter House there was a grove of genetically tailored oaks reaching up to sunlight in their carefully tended plantations. Trees going up 30 meters at least without a limb, and more than 2 meters through the boles. They had been planted when this home was built, replacements for these beams when age weakened them. 1900 SY, the beams were supposed to endure. How carefully the acolytes around her watched Mother Superior, without ever appearing to look directly at her. Odraid turned her head to peer out the western windows at the sunset. Dust again. The spreading intrusion from the desert inflamed the setting sun, and set it glowing like a distant ember that might explode into uncontrollable fire at any instant. Odraid suppressed a sigh. Thoughts such as these recreated her nightmare. The chasm. The tightrope. She knew if she closed her eyes, she would feel herself swaying on the rope. The hunter with the axe was nearer. Acolytes eating close by stirred nervously, as though they sensed her disquiet. Perhaps they did. Odraid heard the movement of fabrics, and this dragged her out of her nightmare. She had become sensitized to a new note in the sounds of Central. There was a grating noise behind the most commonplace movements. That chair being shifted behind her, and the opening of that kitchen door. Rasping grit. Cleaning crews complained of sand, and the damnable dust. Odraid stared out the window at the source of that irritation. Wind from the south. A dull haze, something between tan and earth brown, drew a curtain across the horizon. After the wind, dustings of its deposits would be found in building corners and on lee sides of hills. There was a flinty aroma to it, something alkaline that irritated the nostrils. She looked down at the table as a serving acolyte placed her meal in front of her. Odrade found herself enjoying this change from quick meals in her workroom and private dining room. When she ate alone up there, acolytes brought food so quietly and cleared away with such silent efficiency that sometimes she was surprised to find everything gone. Here, dining was bustle and conversation. In her quarters, Chef Duana might come in clucking, "You are not eating enough." Odrade generally heeded such admonitions. Watchdogs had their uses. Tonight's meal was slake pork and a sauce of soy and molasses, minimal melange, a touch of basil and lemon, fresh green beans cooked al dente with peppers, dark red grape juice to drink. She took a bite of slake pork with anticipation and found it passable, a bit overcooked for her taste. Acolyte chefs had not missed it by much. Then why this feeling of too many such meals? She swallowed, and hypersensitivity identified additives. This food was not here just to replenish Mother Superior's energy. Someone in the kitchen had asked for her day's nutrition list and adjusted this plate accordingly. Food is a trap, she thought. More addictions. She did not like the cunning ways Chapter House chefs concealed things they put in the food for the good of the diners. They knew, of course, that a reverend mother could identify ingredients and adjust metabolism within her limits. They were watching her right now, wondering how Mother Superior would judge tonight's menu. As she ate, she listened to the other diners. None intruded on her, not physically or vocally. Sounds returned almost to what they had been before her entrance. Waggling tongues always changed their tone slightly when she entered and resumed at lower volume. An unspoken question lay in all of those busy minds around her. Why is she here tonight? Odrade sensed quiet awe in some nearby diners, a reaction Mother Superior sometimes employed to her advantage. Awe with an edge on it. Acolytes whispered among themselves, so the proctors reported. She has Taraza. They meant Odrade possessed her late predecessor as primary. The two of them were a historical pair, required study for postulants. Dar and Tar, already a legend. Even Balanda, dear old vicious Bell, came at Odrade obliquely because of this. Few frontal attacks, very little blaring in her accusatory arguments. Taraza was credited with saving the sisterhood. That silenced much opposition. Taraza had said honored maters were essentially barbarians, and their violence, although not totally deflectable, could be guided into bloody displays. Events had more or less verified this. Correct up to a point, Tar. None of us anticipated the extent of their violence. Taraza's classical Veronica, how apt the bullring image, had aimed the honored maters into such episodes of carnage that the universe was mordant with potential supporters of their brutalized victims. How do I defend us? It was not so much that defensive plans were inadequate. They could become irrelevant. That, of course, is what I seek. We must be purified and made ready for a supreme effort. Balanda had sneered at that idea. For our demise? Is that why we must be purified? Balanda would be ambivalent when she discovered what Mother Superior planned. Balanda Vicious would applaud. Balanda Mentat would argue for delay, until a more propitious moment. But I will seek my own peculiar way, despite what my sisters think. and many sisters thought Odraid quite the strangest Mother Superior they had ever accepted, elevated more with the left hand than with the right. Taraza Primary, I was there when you died, Tar. No one else to gather your persona. Elevation by accident. Many disapproved of Odraid, but when opposition arose, back they went to Taraza Primary, the best Mother Superior in our history. Amusing. Taraza within was the quickest to laugh and ask, Why don't you tell them about my mistakes, Dar? Especially about how I misjudged you. Odraid chewed reflectively on a bite of slig pork. I'm overdue for a visit to Shiana. South into the desert, and that soon. Shiana must be made ready to replace Tam. The changing landscape loomed large in Odraid's thoughts. More than 1,500 years of Bene Gesserit occupancy on Chapter House. Signs of us everywhere. Not just in special groves or vineyards and orchards. What it must be doing to the collective psyche, seeing such changes come over their familiar land. The acolyte seated beside Odraid made a soft, throat-clearing sound. Was she about to address Mother Superior? A rare occurrence. The young woman continued to eat without speaking. Odraid's thoughts returned to the prospective journey into the desert. Shiana must have no forewarning. I must be sure she is the one we need. There were questions for Shiana to answer. Odraid knew what she would find on inspection stops en route. In sisters, in plant and animal life, in the very foundations of Chapter House. She would see changes gross and changes subtle. Things to wrench at Mother Superior's vaunted serenity. Even Mirbella, never out of the no-ship, sensed these changes. Only that morning, seated with her back to her console, Mirbella had listened with new attentiveness to Odraid standing over her. Edgy alertness in the captive honored made her. Her voice betrayed doubts and unbalanced judgments. All is transient, Mother Superior. That is knowledge impressed on you by other memory. No planet, no land or sea, nor part of any land or sea is here forever. A morbid thought. Rejection. Wherever we stand, we are only stewards. A useless viewpoint. Hesitant, questioning why Mother Superior chose this moment to say such things. I hear honored maters talking through you. They gave you greedy dreams, Mirbella.
So you say.
Deeply resentful. Honored maters think they can buy infinite security. A small planet, you know, with plenty of subservient population. Mirbella produced a grimace. More planets, Odraid snapped. Always more and more and more. That's why they come swarming back. Poor pickings in this old empire. Excellent, Mirbella. You're beginning to think like one of us. And that makes me a nothing. Neither fish nor fowl, but your own true self. Even there, you're only a steward. Beware, Mirbella. If you think you own something, that's like walking on quicksand. This got a puzzled frown. Something would have to be done about the way Mirbella allowed her emotions to play so openly on her face. It was permissible here, but someday. So nothing is safely owned. So what? Bitter. Bitter. You speak some of the right words, but I don't think you've yet found a place in yourself where you can endure for your lifetime. Until an enemy finds me and slaughters me? Honored Mater training clings like glue. But she spoke to Duncan the other night in a way that tells me she is ready. The Van Gogh painting, I do believe, has sensitized her. I heard it in her voice. I must review that record.
Who would slaughter you, Mirbella? You'll never withstand an honored Maester attack.
I've already stated the basic fact that concerns us. No place is eternally safe.
Another of your useless damned lessons.
In the Acolyte Hall, Odraid recalled she had not found time to review that Komai record of Duncan and Mirbella. A sigh almost escaped her. She covered it with a cough. Never do to let the young women see disturbance in Mother Superior. To the desert and Shiana. Inspection tour as soon as I can make time for it. Time. Again, the acolyte seated beside Odraid made that throat noise. Odraid watched peripherally. Blonde, short black dress trimmed in white. Intermediate third stage. No movement of the head toward Odraid. No sidelong glances. This is what I will find on my inspection tour. Fears. And in the landscape, those things we always see when we run out of time. Trees left uncut because woodcutters have gone. Dragooned into our scattering. Gone to their graves. Gone to unknown places. Perhaps even to peonage. Will I see architectural fancies becoming attractive because they are incomplete? Builders departed? No. We don't go in much for fancies. Other memory held examples she wished she might find. Old buildings more beautiful because they were unfinished. The builder bankrupt, an owner angered at his mistress. Some things were more interesting because of that. Old walls, old ruins. Time sculpture. What would Bell say if I ordered a fancy in my favorite orchard? The acolyte beside Odraid said, Mother Superior? Excellent. They so seldom find the courage. Yes? Faint questioning. This had better be important. Would she hear? She heard. I intrude, Mother Superior, because of the urgency, and because I know your interest in the orchards. Superb. This acolyte had thick legs, but that did not extend to her mind. Odraid stared at her silently. I am the one making the map for your bedchamber, Mother Superior. So this was a reliable adept, a person trusted with work from Mother Superior. Even better. Will I have my map soon?
2 days, Mother Superior.
I am adjusting projection overlays where I will mark the desert's daily growth. A brief nod. That had been in the original order. An acolyte to keep the map current. Odraid wanted to awaken each morning. Her imagination ignited by that changing view. The first thing impressed on awareness at arising. I put a report in your workroom this morning, Mother Superior. Orchard management. Perhaps you did not see it. Odraid had seen only the label. She had been late coming from exercises, anxious to visit Mirbella. So much depended on Mirbella. The plantations around Central must either be abandoned or action taken to sustain them, the acolyte said. That's the gist of the report. Repeat the report verbatim. Night fell and the room lights brightened as Odraid listened. Concise, terse even. The report carried a note of admonishment Odraid recognized as originating with Balanda. No archival signature, but Weather's warnings went through archives, and this acolyte had lifted some of the original words. The acolyte fell silent. Report concluded. How do I respond? Orchards, pastures, and vineyards were not merely a buffer against alien intrusions, pleasant decorations on the landscape. They supported chapter house morale and tables. They support my morale. How quietly this acolyte waited. Curly blonde hair and round face. Pleasing countenance, though the mouth was wide. Food remained on her plate, but she was not eating. Hands folded in her lap. I am here to serve you, Mother Superior. While Odraid composed her response, memory intruded, an old incident simulflowing over immediate observations. She remembered her ornithopter training course. Two acolyte students with instructor at midday, high over the wetlands of Lampadas. She had been paired with as inept an acolyte as could have been accepted by the sisterhood, obviously a gene choice. The breeding mistresses wanted her for a characteristic to be passed along to offspring. It certainly wasn't emotional balance or intelligence. Odraid remembered the name. Lin Sheen. Lin Sheen had shouted at their instructor, I am going to fly this damn thopter. And all the while a whirling sky and landscape of trees and marshy lakeshore dizzied them. That was how it seemed. Us stationary and the world moving. Lin Sheen doing the wrong thing every time. Each movement created worse gyrations. The instructor cut her out of the system by pulling the disconnects only he could reach. He did not speak until they were flying straight and level. No way are you ever going to fly this, lady. Not ever. You don't have the right reactions. You have to begin training those into someone like you before puberty. I am. I'll fly this damn thing. Hands jerking at the useless controls. You're washed out, lady. Grounded. Odraid breathed easier, realizing she had known all along that Lin Sheen might kill them. Whirling toward Odraid in the rear, Lin Sheen screamed, Tell him! Tell him he must obey a Bene Gesserit! Addressing the fact that Odraid, several years ahead of Lin Sheen, already displayed a commanding presence. Odraid sat in silence, features immobile. Silence is often the best thing to say, some Bene Gesserit humorous had scrawled on a washroom mirror. Odraid found that good advice then and later. Recalling herself to the needs of the acolyte in the dining hall, Odraid wondered why that old memory had come of itself. Such things seldom happened without purpose. Not silence now, certainly. Humor? Yes, that was the message. Odraid's humor, applied later, had taught Lin Sheen something about herself. Humor under stress.